Hello everyone, and thank you for joining us today on our February session of the Azure Networking Deep Dive. I am Sally Mahande, and I'm here today with my colleagues, Christoph, Richard, Federico, and Gerald. Today's session is going to be around the virtual data center approach. We have a guest speaker from Corp, Fabrizio, who kindly accepted to cover the session for us today. Fabrizio is based out of the UK, and he is an Azure Networking Program Manager. So I will start with a very quick introduction of the series for people who have not joined our calls before. I will very quickly introduce the team. We will go through the session and then we will take some time for Q&A. So please feel free to post your questions through the IM window. My team and I are here and we will pick them up as Fabrizio is speaking. And then at the end of the session, we could take some time maybe for one or two questions in live mode. So for those of you who don't know us, we are the EMEA Networking Sales Specialists, and the main goal of this series is to just help you understand the way networking works in Asia and how to plan and design the connectivity to the Microsoft Cloud. When we built this series, we had a readiness plan in mind. So if you have watched some of the recordings before, you probably noticed that we started with the basics and then slowly try to get it more complex and more interesting for you. So I really recommend that you take the time to watch the other recordings that really introduce each of the concepts of the other sessions. And the session of today especially is going to be a global overview of many concepts that we had discussed in the other sessions. In terms of the format, we do this once per month. We do it via Skype, and we started in October. So far we've had four sessions, and this series will end in June. In terms of the time, I know we have received a lot of emails asking us if the time could fit more to the US time zone or to Asia. The problem is that we're all based in EMEA and we have EMEA coverage. So if the time does not work, please know that all of the sessions are recorded and all the recordings are made available maximum one day after each session. In terms of the format, we might have some business overviews from our partner sales executives. Sometimes it will be completely technical. In terms of the audience, customers and partners are the priority, but anybody is welcome, Microsofties or not. And in terms of the agenda, we started in October. We had a session on Azure virtual networks and the basics of Azure networking. In November, our session was around securing virtual networking. In December, we discussed inter-VNet connectivity. And in January, we discussed hybrid cloud connectivity options. Today, we are going to cover virtual data centers. And the next session will be in March, and that one is going to be about the implementation and really the technical details of an express route deployment. And here you have the link to the recordings. Also, you could go to Channel 9 and you could just look for the Azure Networking Deep Dive series and you will find all of the recordings. So before I hand this to Fabrizio, I just wanted to give you a very quick recap in case you missed our former sessions. In our former sessions, we introduced an important concept. It's an important concept to understand in order to feel comfortable with this session today. And that concept is VNet peering. And VNet peering is simply a mechanism that will allow you to connect two different virtual networks that are in the same region through the Microsoft backbone. So they will still be separate resources, you will manage them separately, but what will happen is that the virtual machines in those virtual networks will be able to communicate with each other by directly using private IP addresses. So if you look at the figure here, you will see that when a virtual machine in VNet 1 wants to speak to a virtual machine in VNet 2, the switching slash routing happens as if that was happening within the same virtual network. We also introduced another concept, which is the concept of transit routing. And that mainly is the ability of a virtual network to route traffic which has not been originated in it and that is not destined to it. So in this specific figure, it is what VNet 2 would be doing. It would be transiting traffic that's coming from VNet 1 and it's destined to VNet 3. So VNet 2 would just allow that transit of routing. The other concept we introduced was around the gateway transit. And again, that's the ability of a virtual network to route traffic which was not coming from it and it's not destined to it. In this specific figure, for example, VNet2 is taking traffic that's coming from VNet1, and through its own gateway, it's taking that traffic to on-prem by going through an express route or an IPsec tunnel. But the main idea here is that virtual network 1 does not have a gateway. It is using a remote gateway, and that remote gateway is in VNet2. So basically, the virtual network gateway in VNet2 is doing that transit. It's taking traffic coming from VNet1 and taking it back to on-prem. So these are just concepts we introduced in our session around inter-VNet connectivity. I just wanted to give you a quick reminder so that you can easily follow up with our discussion today. And now I will hand it to you, Fabrizio, and you
thank
can
you
start
very
with
much.
Your introduction of virtual data center. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sally. So in this session, we are going to talk on design pattern in the cloud. It is not a session focused on specific Azure features, but a journey in a possible architecture. We have in Azure a lot of components. How do we assemble all together? Our final goal is to provide an architecture pattern to answer to some customer requests. A design pattern can provide a guideline, but the way the different Azure components are put together, it depends actually on the feature available in the platform. So the design phase can change over the time. Briefly here, the agenda. Initially, we are going to talk on customer needs and how the customer may use the silos approach for lift and shift from premises to Azure. Therefore, we are going to introduce the concept of virtual data center and explain why the virtual data center is better architecture compared with the silos approach. After, we are going to present how it works at the virtual data center, how the virtual data center is connected with on-premises sites, and how the role-based access control help the customer organization with different teams, different roles and responsibility to work in a teamwork in a virtual data center.
Let's start with feel free to take over as presenter if you want to move to
slides. Oh, sorry.
No problem. I had the agenda there. No problem. There you go.
So you see now the customer requirements?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, good.
Perfect.
So let's start with the requirements. How we define a virtual data center? We can define a virtual data center as a complex data center hosted in the cloud. When a customer considers to use a public cloud platform for running what they traditionally use to run on-premises data center, they won't replicate in easy way the same on-premises environment to the cloud. The on-premises data center are normally based on complex network. Customers want in the cloud the same capability they use on-premises to reproduce in the cloud the same configuration they have on-premises. The first question came up to run in the cloud is how they can make the network secure to host workloads of different projects in the same way they do on-premises. Customers need to implement a security policy to be compliant with the internal security rules, but also compliant with some regulation of a specific industry they work. Just an example, a customer in finance, it may have an interest to get the PCI certification, the payment card industry certification, to certify an application that run credit reports for consumer market. One of the reasons why customers want to migrate in the cloud is for the ability to work in a more agile way compared with they do on-premises. They want to deploy a new application quickly to respond fast to the request coming for the business department. In most of the cases, customers have an existing network. When they need to a new workload, they add the new component with an inheritance of all security role they have already defined in other existing workloads. When a new project is created, the project leads engage different teams with different components, engage also the central IT asking for a dedicated environment to deploy a new project. Normally, more environments are needed to respect the software cycle that include, for example, development, testing, validation benchmark, and production. The central IT department must be able to respond to those requests quickly and provide them in isolated environments where they apply the default security policy that the organization has decided to be compliant with. If, for example, the team responsible for the application asks for a new application where they need to run a web app, the application comes in most of the cases with a web front-end subnet where live the web services and a back-end subnet where lives the database. The communication between the web front-end and the database back-end must be secure with a restriction on communication flows set with a default security policy. The reason why customers ask the ability to segment their network because they want to implement their security policy. Segmentation provides the capability to control the session initialized for a specific security zone to another security zone. For example, you can create a DMZ where you can deploy VMs that require interaction with internet. Or you may have an internal zone where you deploy an application that needs to be reachable for internal user only. For example, an application with access to sensitive data like an analysis of competitors' products. Segmentation in Azure can be provided by subnet, by network security groups, and a firewall. Network security groups are network filter at layer 4, able to control the IP traffic flow in ingress and in egress for a subnet, and in ingress and in egress for a specific virtual machine. Network security groups are not capable to make a traffic inspection. The firewall and proxy firewall, for example, in Azure Marketplace, can make traffic control inspection with the capability to recognize malicious traffic, but they can't be deployed anywhere in the architecture due to the high cost of the maintenance and the maintenance efforts. Operation maintenance on the firewall is quite intensive activity that keep normally the security team busy in analysis of firewall logs. So, just for recap, the implementation of a security zone is based on mix of components, virtual subnet, network security group, and firewalls. One of the intuitive way to answer to a demand of a project is the model with replication of the same infrastructure multiple times, a sort of a cloning. Multiple environments can be run in the cloud in independent way without a central control. If it is missing a central point of control, it may happen that a developer deliver the application without the company security role in the deployment. The diagram show up in the right corner, in a red box, a case where an application is exposed to internet without a firewall protection. The side effect is that the company will be exposed to a risk of intrusion and hacking. The approach of the duplication of some infrastructure multiple times, 10 times, 100 times, is called the silos approach. In a silos approach, we have a strong deduplication of a component to control the access to the perimeter network, like internet and on-premises network. Is the silos approach a good approach to move existing and new application to the cloud? Are we able to propose a better architecture, more efficient than silos? First of all, the silos approach is not efficient because it's the common layer to control access to the perimeter networks is deployed multiple times. Second point, the silos approach introduces also a challenge in management because it is really hard to control tens, hundreds of workloads island in independent flows. Within the blended flows inside. How we can guarantee that a common security policy is a uniform apply to all workloads. Third element is the proliferation of disconnect islands. There is a prone to have a violation of the enterprise security role because the policy is not managed for a central IT department. In most of the cases, in silos approach, we have multiple firewalls per virtual network. Some firewalls are deployed to protect the inbound traffic for internet. Other firewalls are deployed to control and protect the outbound connection. Some customers use different firewall to protect the connection with on-premises networks. In silos approach, every VNet needs of an SBS route gateway that can be connected to the same SBS route circuits, for example, like in the diagram. The interconnection, the inconvenience to use a multiple SBS route gateway bind to the same circuit is the traffic inter-VNets between different deployments need to transit in Microsoft Edge router located normally in SBS route exchange facility, going back and forth for the same Azure data center. The effect is called tromboning or hairpinning. The SBS route exchange facility normally is not always near to the Azure data center, and that introduces in some cases a delay of 10 milliseconds. Let's discuss now briefly some improvement on the silos approach to get something more appealing. We have seen how the silos have a common infrastructure, is a clone multiple times for the different projects. A basic idea to optimize the silos approach is to share this common infrastructure between different deployments. To share common infrastructure, we need of different topology, like, for example, hub and spoke, where a common centralized infrastructure is deploying the hub and the specific independent workloads for the different projects are distributed in the spokes. The workloads are present in the hub, and in the spoke, but the difference is that hub hosts only the workloads with auxiliary function. They are required to the spoke, and the spoke hosts the workload for the projects. The hub is the central zone of transit that control for any communication between spokes. In the hub, we have also access to the perimeter networks. They transit all the traffic with external network, for example, like internet and on-premises happen through the hub. This is the point of control where we want to apply the security central policy. And this is the reason why the hub contain most of the network devices like a firewall to make traffic control. The diagram show that the hub and spokes talk each other through the VNet peering. The virtual data center is a viable architecture thanks to the VNet peering. VNet peering is a mechanism that we have seen before, connects two virtual networks in the same Azure region through the Azure backbone. The traffic between VNet peering have a high bandwidth and low latency. The delay of a packet in a VNet peering is more or less the same with a single VNet, in a single VNet. One other important property is that the VNet peering does not support transitive routing. how the property of non-transitive routing influence the virtual data center architecture. In the hub, let's assume that the hub is peering with two spokes. Let's say hub is an VNet peering with a spoke one, a hub is an VNet peering with spoke two, like the diagram. The traffic originated from the spoke one can be routed successful at high throughput to the hub, but will not able to reach out as is the spoke two. Therefore, the property of non-transitive routing in VNet peering determine a sort of isolation between spokes. Also, if each spoke have a VNet peering with a hub. Generally, in the virtual data center architecture, the spokes are not peered. Here we want to talk about the basic Azure component to build up a virtual data center. The design of the virtual data center is based on different group of components. We have a connectivity components like VNet, virtual network, VNet peering, load balancer, and as you said before, the VNet peering is the pillar. We have also the flow control, for example, with a group of components like a network virtual appliance, web application firewall, application gateway, and so on, and network security group. And we have also a third class of components, like Azure subscription, Azure Active Directory, a role-based access control. One further element to consider in the design of the virtual data center is the limit on the maximum number of VNet peering to the hub. And hub can be actually be peered with a maximum of 50 spokes. When you reach out the limit and you want to scale up beyond, you need to add another hub to the architecture. The model of the virtual data center can scale up quite well in the total number of spokes, thanks to the VNet peering. The model scale up also in bandwidth. In the VNet, in the hub, we have the firewall farm managed with a pool of, manages a pool of a firewall. If the traffic volume in ingress and in egress increase, we can add another firewall to the pool to scale up to higher bandwidth and a higher number of connections. The traffic scale up well also in high throughput with the transit in VNet peering, because we do not have a bottleneck there. And the model scale up at 10 gig without bottleneck with on-premises network. The VNet in the hub can use a single express route gateway with the SKU ultra performance, able to support a 10 gigabit per second throughput. The ultra performance gateway can be linked to an express route circuit at 10 gigabit per second. The model offers also a single point of control of the security rule in the hub. It is easy to control that the company security rule are rights apply. One of the important factors is the cost. The virtual data center architecture is more cost effective than silos approach. We are going to see a business case with some more detail on price. We have here a business case with a cost analysis between the silos approach and the virtual data center architecture. The idea is to qualify how much the virtual data center is more cost effective compared with the silos in equivalent configuration. Let me explain briefly how has been set the case. From Azure Marketplace, we have done a selection of a firewall with a large adoption. We have considered the cost of the license firewall in model bring your own license extended to 1 year. We have included in the cost also the infrastructure as a service VMs, 20 hours per day where the firewall run on. In the business case, we have evaluated different configuration with different number of security zones. And to keep the comparison honest, in every configuration, the total aggregated bandwidth of the firewall in a silos is the same that we have in a virtual data center configuration. The cost analysis includes only the firewall. It doesn't consider any common component that potentially we have in the architecture, like DNS, domain controller, PKI, Active Directory Federation Server. The table here show up a different configuration in two approaches. Silos on the left, a virtual data center on the right. In the business case, we have a different configuration with different number of security zones, 5, 10, 20, 40, 80 security zones. As you see in the topology, we have considered only a single firewall in every configuration. In production, normally we have two or more firewall, and the cost would be greater than reporting this analysis. The outcome of the cost is show up in the graph. The graph is visible a strong gap between the two architectures. The blue line is the yearly cost of the silos approach, and the orange line reports a yearly cost of the firewall with a virtual data center architecture. As you see, the costs grow up linearly with a number of spokes. And the cost of the virtual data center is 30% of the cost of the silos. And this is true for all the configuration. This is a good proof on how much the virtual data center is more cost effective compared with the silos approach. Let's talk now about the how it works the hub. In the hub, we have the network virtual appliance, generally firewall, to make an inspection of the incoming traffic for internet. But we have also a web application firewall. We have a solution in high, if we want a solution in high availability, we need to have more than one firewall. With multiple firewall, we need to distribute the traffic between different network virtual appliances. And this can be done through an Azure load balancer. For the traffic in ingress for internet, we need of an internet-facing load balancer that exposes to internet a public IP that normally also in the picture is referenced as VIP. The Azure load balancer maps the public IP and TCP port or UDP port number in incoming traffic to a public IP and port number in internal firewalls, and also the reverse for the traffic for the firewall to the internet. The load balancer has a mechanism of health probe that make a polling on specific ports to verify the status of the firewall. If one firewall doesn't answer to the polling message, it means there is an outage, and the load balancer will route the traffic only on the active firewall in the pool. The hub can host also multiple group of firewalls with a single or multiple interface connected with different subnets to get more flexibility, for example, in management of the security rule. And the web application firewall are firewall specialized for web application. All companies have a good number of web application, and in most of the cases, it makes sense to deploy the hub in the hub, the web application firewall to protect the web workloads in the spoke. By web application firewall, we can protect the website for a lot of vulnerability like SQL injection, session URL tampering, buffer overflow, cross-site scripting, malware. There's plenty of possible attack in a website. In Azure Marketplace, we have also a broad offering of web application firewall of different vendors, so the customer can select the same brand they use on premises without need to learn a new technology. In the hub, we can make have also, for example, an Azure Application Gateway that works as a layer 7 to make a load of balance on HTTP, HTTPS traffic coming for internet. Offload and make a sort of load balancing on cookie affinity. And in the hub we have also in a specific subnet a common workloads that host the shared services for the spoke like DNS domain controller. Through the hub we have access to the on-premises network via site-to-site VPN with a transit in internet or express router connection with transit in a private link. Let's talk now about the spoke. The main goal of the spoke is to host a workload. It can be a simple application, a single database, or can be a complex multi-tier application. In the schema, you see the case of a common three-tier application deployed in a VNet of one spoke with a tier in every subnet, a front-end tier with a web server, a mid tier with application server, a back-end tier with a database. This is a common pattern for all multi-tier application. The communication traffic out of the spoke happen through the hub. So we can make the assumption that when the traffic coming in the spoke is already been filtered and verified in the hub. Without additional cost, we can still apply some local security rule inside the spoke using the network security groups. The network security groups can be applied to a specific NIC card of the VMs or can be applied to a subnet or both, NIC and subnet. So we can use the network security group to filter the traffic intra-subnet and inter-subnet. In the same schema, the web front-end tier talk with the application server but never talk with the database, because there is no required for the application. In the diagram, we got a web front-end implemented by ScaleSet. There is a feature in Azure able to scale up on the number of VMs based on the CPU load. This is very great when the customers need to have a good scalability in the application. Through ScaleSet, the web front-end can scale up and down on the number of VMs based on the load. The load balancer is a part of the web front-end deployment and allow to make a balancing on incoming traffic between the different VMs in ScaleSet. And the UDR, the user-defined route, is a custom route that point to an IP address in the hub, typically the front-end IP address of the internal load balancer. We are going to see more in detail here. So we have seen what we have in the hub and the spoke. Now we are going to show how to make an implementation of the intercommunication between spoke with transit to the firewall in the hub. This is could be useful in some application where the customer need to distribute the application component in multiple security zone with interconnection under the control of the central security policy in the hub. Just an example. An e-commerce application where the web front-end is outsourced to an external company and the data tier is under control of an internal DB department is a quite a useful case. Company can trust the traffic coming for the spoke 100%, and for this reason, they want to be sure that the traffic is packed in the hub. Here, the virtual machine in a Spoke 1, VM1, with a private IP address IPW1, need to send the traffic to a virtual machine in a Spoke 2 with a private IP address IPW2. The VM1 send out traffic to the source IP with a source IP address IPW1, a destination IPW2. On the subnet 1 of the Spoke 1, we have also the a custom route that says, please check the destination IP address. If it belongs to a destination network N2, forward the packet to the internal front-end in the hub that you see here. So the packet go out and reach out to the internal front-end of the load balancer. When I reach out there, the load balancer forward the traffic to the active firewall. And here is applied a sort of a source NAT translation in the firewall, and the traffic go out for the firewall with the IP address, with the source IP address change. That one is required because the source NAT that has to be applied in any case, otherwise the packets will be discarded to the rule of non-transitive routing in VNet peering. The source IP address, the packet in egress now is able to reach out to the destination network in Spoke 2. In summary, an interconnection spoke to spoke to the firewall in the hub requires an internal load balancer to divert the traffic on the active firewall. And what is really important, the source NAT needs to be applied to the traffic incoming to the firewall. Otherwise, due to the non-transitive routing of the VNet peering, the packet never will be able to reach out to the destination VNet. The communication between the Spoke 2 and Spoke 1 happen exactly in the same way, with the same process. So the natural question now is why we do not interconnect spoke to spoke through a VNet peering? That interconnection between spoke to the VNet peering is easy to implement, but the traffic interspoke does not transit anymore to the hub. If the transit doesn't transit anymore in the hub, we can't be sure that the common central policies are apply correctly. The intercommunication between spoke is a viable solution where the traffic do not require traffic inspection to the firewall. The network security group applied to the spoke is enough to control the intercommunication traffic and make a filtering. It is a special case where it is not mandatory respect the common security rule applying in the hub. A typical example could be a case where we have a large database in the spoke, for example, the spoke 3 in the feature, and two different applications, one in each in a different spoke, spoke 4 and spoke 5, where both of these applications need to talk simultaneously with the database in a spoke tree. One of the purposes of the hub is to control access to the on-premises network. To be effective, the virtual data center has to be considered like a sort of a natural extension of the on-premises data center, ideally as a LAN extension. The connection between Azure data center and on-premises network can be implemented through two different technologies, Azure site-to-site VPN with transit in Internet, and express route with transit in private links. Azure site-to-site VPN works with IPsec, with encrypted tunnels, in transit in Internet, and it can be configured in active-active, where both of Azure VPN Gateway are able to forward traffic simultaneously. In Express Route, the traffic transit in a private link of the telco provider and in Microsoft IP backbone. The Express Route has the advantage to establish a connection with a deterministic low latency and high throughput. The Express Route becomes a must to have in hybrid configuration where customers deploy, for example, internal application in the spoke of the virtual data center and require a strong interaction and throughput with on-premises. An efficient virtual data center architecture requires an efficient communication with on-premises. This one can be achieved only by Express Route. As in the picture, the VNet in the hub can be bound to two different Express Route circuits to provide the connectivity to different on-premise locations. A configuration with two or more circuits is extremely resilient. In configuration with two or more Express Route circuits, the customer can apply the routing policy, define the preferred path from Azure to on-premises, and from on-premises to Azure. So the routing in Express Route is completely under the control of the customer. As reported in the schema, in the hub, the site-to-site VPN and Express Route can coexist in the same gateway subnet. The site-to-site VPN can be configured as a secure failover path to the Express Route connection or as an independent connection. We are going to talk now on how we fit the organization where we have different teams, different responsibility, different competence to a project and workload in a virtual data center. Generally, if you provide to the team too many permissions, you got the list that the company couldn't have the security rule respected. If a developer team have a responsibility to filter the incoming traffic on a new application, they could forget to set the right security rule because the security is not their job. On the other hand, if you apply a strong restriction to the team, they won't be able to make the job. For example, a developer team that do not have access in read-only to a database could be struggle to make debugging, and that one could be cause a longer delivery cycle in the application. Every specialized team need to set a privilege to manage a specific technology like VMs, storage, and network that require to build up a project. Azure role-based access control help to grant the amount of the access to the user or group of users. The mechanism of grant access is based on roles. In role-based access control, we have more than 30 predefined built-in roles with predefined rights on specific Azure object like VMs, storage, network, SQL DB, and many others. We have in role-based control also a generic building role like owner, contributor, and reader. Owner, contributor have a full control on the object where is applied. And contributor is different for owner because do not have the capability to delegate other user or groups. The reader have only read-only access to the resource where is applied. So a lot of roles to find control what a specific user or group of user can do. A role has also a scope of assignment, as you see in the diagram on the left. A building role can be applied to a different Azure object. It can be applied to an Azure subscription. to a resource group or a specific resource that lives in a resource group. On the scope assignment of the role, we have the concept of inheritance. If the role is applied to an Azure subscription, top of the picture, all the resource group and the Azure object under the subscription will inherit the same rights. For example, if we have the role of a network contributor to a resource group, the user with this scope will be able to make any action on the network object inside the resource group, like create, delete VNets, create VNet peering, delete VNet peering, and so on. Another example, if we apply to a user or group of users the role of VM contributor at a subscription level, this group will be able to create and delete any VMs in the subscription. Doesn't matter in which resource group the VMs are. Inheritance property of the role is really powerful to keep agile the mechanism of access control in a virtual data center. Let's see now a basic example that explains how to use the role-based access control in a virtual data center. In this example, the HR department wanted to deploy an Azure project, for example, a payslip project. The project leads engage different teams based on different skill set required to develop the workloads. They engage the team with a competence in .NET, in SQLDB, but also the team that we have called in the diagram NET2, belonging to the central IT responsible for set up the network infrastructure where run the workloads. The teams belong to groups, and the group can arrange by competence. Each group have one or more user, and the group belong to an Azure IT Directory tenant. Let's assume that the requirement on our payslip project are allowed to keep light the software development cycle. Only two environments are required, DevOps and production. Each environment, for example, the DevOps, run in a specific Azure subscription, and all the resources that are part of the workload run in one spoke of the virtual data center. The table show up in the first row. Also, the central IT group responsible for operation maintenance of the routing and of the central security policy in the hub of the virtual data center. In the picture, we have two environments for the payslip. On the left, the DevOps environment in spoke one, and on the left and on the right, the production environment for the spoke two. As in the schema on the left, the group NET2 got the role of a network contributor in the subscription, so this group can make any action on the virtual network in a spoke one. The same group have also the role of VM reader, so the group can get visibility in read-only or the VMs creates in the spoke one. On the left, we have the production environment in a spoke two. Here, the group prod2 has the role of contributor at the subscription level. It can make any action in the subscription. The group is responsible for operation maintenance of the workload in production. It makes sense to assign to this group the full access to the subscription. In production environment, we have also the group NET2 responsible for the network with a role with a read-only to the infrastructure as a service VMs set at subscription level. In the hub on the top of the picture, of the figure, We see the group NetOne as SEC security that are the role of a contributor. They are responsible for the maintenance of a correct company security role in the hub. That one is just an elementary example. Management of a large virtual data centers can be really more complex of what we have seen here. Just we are at the end, and let me recap the main point that we have discussed. The virtual data center is an efficient architecture based on hub and spoke, capable to scale up in bandwidth and number of projects. The virtual data center allow a management of a central security policy and respect the security compliance rule of the organization. The virtual data center is also more cost-effective than silos approach. We have provided proof through a business case. And building role in role-based access control help to set a fine access control to a virtual data center architecture. And with this recap, we are at the end of the session.
Thank you so much, Fabrizio. This was great. We have a lot of questions, and we only have 6 minutes left. So I have to pick up only a few. Let me think. So there was a question around whether VNet peering will support VNets that are not in the same region. You know, that's part of the roadmap, but. Do you have any comments on that?
Yes, I can comment that one to say the product team is thinking to implement the. They know there are a lot of demanding, but please do not expect this feature for the next 6 months. So we have a plan, but it's a longer plan. It's not a feature easy to implement.
Yes. There's a question from Alex, so he wants feedback on the design, just to see if this is something that you've seen before. So he has a lot of workloads that mixes production, dev, test, etc. And he was thinking of having just one hub and two spokes, and basically one spoke would be for internal solutions and one spoke would be for DMZ. So he says he's applying the best practices, but instead of having a spoke for each workload, it would be a spoke for a type of solution. Have you seen this kind of design before, and what's your input on it?
Yes. We have discussed in before. You know, in this case, the number of spokes are just limited. And if you think about the economics behind this model, it works. But, of course, you don't get a lot of advantage in terms of economics, you know. There's, because basically you don't use the hub sharing the infrastructure for many on many spokes. So this is still an advantage. I've seen just a few customers use just a small number of spokes. It works fine, but the economics is no, there's no really strong economics behind.
So technically it is possible, and okay. Good. I'm seeing if there are any other questions we didn't pick up yet. Federico, if you see some we missed or we did not answer, feel free to unmute. There was a question around, so if you can have both ExpressRoute and BGP over VPN in the same virtual network.
Yeah. Yes. We supported that one.
Yes. So that was from Lawrence, and I have checked our documentation, and I'm not sure we updated that in the documentation.
But the question is if there's any intercommunication, any propagation of BGP advertisement between site-to-site VPNs, ExpressRoute, or so what exactly is the question?
Is it supported in the first place? Yes, and I understand where you're getting. So your question is, your comment is about the fact that you cannot expect traffic to come through the VPN and then go through the ExpressRoute gateway, right? Because they cannot.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Good. So that's also another comment, Lorenz, that you need to add. So yes, it's supported, but it will not transit. You will not take the traffic from the gateway, the VPN gateway, to the Express Route gateway, just because they both support BGP.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And let me check. I'm looking here. So far, looks good. There was a question around encryption over Express Route.
Yeah, that one is a good asking for
Yes.
many customers. There's some work around. I do not have, I kind of would say that here appear immediately tomorrow, but it's something that the product team is evaluated seriously.
Okay, great. So that was a question from Paul. Does it exist? And if not, are there any plans? Great.
Yeah, there's a plan. There's a plan.
Okay, great. Feedback from Sikander, great session. And if we can do anything similar on storage, computer, database, that would be great. I'll communicate that to the teams that are in charge of those workloads. Thanks, Sikander. Okay, great. Well, I think we have picked up most of the questions. Thank you so much, Fabrizio. I just
Thank
want
you
us
to
to
you.
be sharp on time. So the recording of the session will be uploaded, I think, the latest by tomorrow noon, because we index the videos by chapter and that sometimes takes some time. So thank you so much. And if you would like any follow-up on anything we have discussed over IM, please feel free to email us. Thank you, Fabrizio, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.